When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the No Bad Dogs podcast. This is a great one. This is one of our members in our Tom Davis Online Academy. Basically, this dog This dog is a Malinois. This dog is having an issue with another dog inside the house. So there's an extraordinary amount of good information in this, talking about all the things about how to manage realistic expectations with the dog in the house that doesn't maybe like other dogs. A lot of good questions. These owners are part of the online academy, so they had lots of really great questions and also just understanding of what to do. But I think the most important thing was the realistic expectations here. Very, very, very important to have realistic expectations. That immediately opens up the door for you to become more successful. So I hope you enjoy this podcast. If you're interested in joining the Tom Davis Online Academy, that's where all of my uncut dog training videos are. So if you enjoy my dog training videos and you find them useful and helpful, you can join my online academy for as low as $19.99 a month. I go live every single week and answer your questions live. We also go live at the facility once a month, and we do a live training session with a dog in real time with a Q&A after. And you have access to all of my dog trainers. That's right. My dog trainers at the Upstate Canine Academy, you guys have access to if you're in the All Access, which is $39.99 a month. That means you can train your dog at home while watching my videos and ask my dog trainer questions as you're training. It's a beautiful thing. So anyway, hope this is helpful for you guys. I know that it was for them. So enjoy the podcast. Oh, what's going on?
Oh, well, I know I sent you a laundry list, two paragraph stuff. I got to talk to you on chat on the live about the Malinois.
Okay, yeah. Yep.
Her and my daughter's dog, and dominantly it's reactivity, but it's inside the home, especially with my daughter's dog and any family members that enter the home that she pretty much doesn't know, I guess. I'll just put it that way.
Well, even if she knows them and has met them before, it's like reintroducing every single time over and over and over again. And it's a long introductory period.
Okay. With people or with dogs, you mean?
With people.
With people.
Yeah, she's never met any other dog except for our daughter's dog who lives in the home. And she was fine with her for a good six months.
It was good for a while, but then there was this interaction where my daughter's dog's like this rot mix small thing, but she my dog's a bully, you know, she likes to poke and play, and the other dog flipped around and just charged barking, and at some point my dog Trinity, she just, all right, it's on, and she grabbed her by the back of the scruff with her teeth, and I mean, was just shaking her. And at that point, it just became, I don't like you. She became prey. That's how it almost seemed like, I don't like you at all. And anytime you're in my presence, we're gonna have a fight.
Yeah.
And so we've got them separated by a baby gate right now. So one dog is upstairs, one's down.
Yep. Okay, just to back up a little bit, how old is your Mal now?
She's 1 year, 4 months, okay. I think.
Okay. And is she fixed?
Not yet.
Okay.
That was a follow-up question for you, because there's a lot of opinions on that.
Yeah.
She just went through her second heat. So I was told to kind of wait for the second, but probably closer to 2 years old.
Yep. So when did that switch happen?
When she was a year old, actually.
When she hit a year?
Yep.
That's about right.
So typically, just from my experience, just to recap here, and then I'll go into what I was just going to say. Just to recap, so they were living, your daughter's dog and your dog were living amongst each other fine without any issues. And as soon as your Mal got to a year, then she started really going after your daughter's dog.
I wouldn't say without any issues, just rough play. Like my daughter's dog's more of a lounger, mm-hmm. just wants to lay there. Where, you know, the Mal is at, no, it's on energy all day.
Yep. Okay. I was just going to go into what I was going to say before. So typically when dogs hit that maturity, like that sexual maturity, when they become an adult, if you will, for dogs, it's usually between the 8 month to, depending on the breed, year and change. And so what we see oftentimes is the dog becomes a lot more intense. They become a lot more serious. It's kind of like a little kid not wanting to watch Barney anymore all day and sit around and eat grilled cheeses, as fun as that sounds now as adults. But and what you'll see is you'll just see a more serious thing. So typically not interested in, and this is just generalized. It's not every dog by any means. Once you get a dog that becomes like a serious dog, like if you have a breed that is bred to be serious and to be a working dog, then they're just not interested in hanging out and playing all day. They're not, you know, if you have a pet, sounds like your daughter's dog, like typical pets, dogs who are just, you know, comfortable with playing all day and having fun and don't care about working. They don't take much things seriously. You'll have that personality and that behavior forever, especially if you get them fixed when they're young. It doesn't allow them to actually mature, right? They kind of stay, like mentally, they don't mature to that full capacity of, and that's why they kind of stay this like puppyish type behavior for those periods of times. And these are just things that I've seen in my experience anyway. So that's sometimes why these things happen, is you get dogs like this Mal that you have, like you said, rough play, aggressive play, in your face, really just, you know, redlining all the time. That's just what Malinois do. You'd be pretty disappointed if you got a Malinois and she was a couch potato. You'd be like,
what? I agree. Yeah.
So, you know, without being said, like, that's what they're supposed to be like. And then once you start to get into that maturity where the dog becomes like, now I'm serious about everything, they become less interactive and less social with other dogs and become more engaged with the owners, become more kind of clingy to the owners to say, hey, let's go play tug. Let's go. They're just constantly looking at you like, are we going to go? And this is like the common cycle that working dogs, especially like Malinois, Dutch Shepherds, even working line German Shepherds will get into. And so, you know, unfortunately it does happen. I hate that it happens, but it is common that it happens. It doesn't surprise me that it's happened. And typically what I have found that it's just the genetics of the dog is they all of a sudden get to this point and they're like, I'm not interested in not being structured. Like, I want something to do. I want to engage. I want to play. I want to play tug. I want to go do this. And anything else that gets in my way, I get frustrated. I get upset. And some dogs just become aggressive. And so there's the other side of sometimes dogs just become who they are. So a lot of people say out of nowhere this happened. And the reality is the dog matured into who they were, right? And it's like saying, like, out of nowhere, this person became 6'2". It's like, no, that's who they were going to be their whole life. They just all of a sudden aren't a baby anymore. So now they're 6'2". So okay, what do we do? I mean, I would just say that obviously the ultimate goal is to go back to the way things were, where you didn't have to constantly worry about her going after the other dog. I don't think that that's realistic, because once a dog has kind of decided like, hey, I don't want to play with this other dog. I don't want to, you know, be friends with this other dog. I'm not interested in, you know, lay around and do nothing all day. You know, I think once that's passed, it's like, okay. And like I was saying on the live with you, I think this week or last, we were talking about like, hey, what do we do when we get these dogs that are fighting in the same household? And the reality is generally speaking, if dogs start physically trying to hurt one another, or one dog tries to hurt another dog, their relationship becomes very damaged. It becomes almost, it's tough to bring back. It's tough to trust again because you already know. It's kind of like getting into a really bad fist fight with somebody and then acting like nothing ever happened. It's very difficult to do that as living things, right? So, you know, I think the roadmap here is to have realistic expectations and to keep everybody safe and happy and really manage the situation. So what questions do you have on that?
I mean, currently, you know, we're doing a lot of work on the mouse side. My daughter and her dog, there's hesitation for a variety of reasons that, mm-hmm. you know, I'm even trying to do, you know, hey, let's bring them out to a neutral area. You know, maybe put my dog in a sit stay and have her walk and past over and over, and then maybe flipping it around and doing it that way just to, I'm not looking for them to be best friends, kind of like when you and I were talking about, just neutral, like it's don't go at each other. I mean, right now, if her dog needs to go to the bathroom, we have to put our dog on a leash so there isn't any interaction real quick. And that already raises the tension because once the leash comes out, Trinity knows she's coming downstairs. And so it's like, oh, and she'll sit there and it's this whiny, like, I want to get to her, but it doesn't seem aggressive, like I want to kill her. It's more, she's coming down here, I want to see her, you know, that sort of thing. It's interesting trying to read into that. But then, you know, the other dog will go outside, go to the bathroom, and then bam, she shoots right back upstairs. And it's so, like, I feel bad for the other dog.
Yep.
At this point, it's, I mean, my dog has a life outside of, you know, it's not a 4x4 room she's locked in. And our house has the same, you know, square feet top and bottom. So there's an upstairs that dog can run around in, but I can't control my daughter's dog, so to speak. I mean, it's her dog. So
I guess the interaction that I see between them is when they're in the same room and the other dog, Wednesday, is already on the defense when she sees Trinity. So she growls, like, stay out of my space, you know, and there's a warning shot at Trinity. And Trinity doesn't like the warning. She takes it as a threat. And so Trinity attacks at the warning. She won't back down.
Yep.
And that's where their problem is. You know, like, we have to, that's why the separation is there. And that's why we've chosen to separate, because there's no getting in between Trinity. There's no, you know, even we've done the e-collar and tried to, on both dogs, and tried to, you know, get Trinity to back off. But man, the last couple of fights in between them, when Trinity has locked on, it is like, mm-hmm. Wednesday's not hurt. I mean, pretty badly.
Yeah.
And that's why we've decided to separate at that point, because that warning growl Wednesday puts off is just a threat to Trinity at that point. It's like, don't threaten me. I'm going to show you who's boss.
Yeah.
And I really feel like it's a, and for lack of, it's not like a, I know we've watched lots of your videos, it's not a dominating thing, it's just a don't threaten me, I'm gonna show you, like, I own this house, you don't, you know, it's my space. So that's where I don't know how to get to that neutral zone, like James is talking about, where both dogs can coexist in the same house, you know, we all live here, but Trinity, it was her house first, so you know, that's,
so what,
that's kind of where it's at.
Yeah, no, it makes sense. And you know, Malinois are pushy, usually confident dogs. And so somebody, you know, somebody comes downstairs and, you know, in her house and flips her off and says, screw you. She's like, well, now we're fighting. So I'm not going to take this shit, you know? So it makes total sense to me. What is your ultimate goal here? I mean, what would be your ideal situation with this going on? Because I know it's kind of complicated. It's not like a roommate where it's like, hey, you know, so.
Well, the question on the life scenario, we don't know how long this situation is going to be in play either. Like, you know, when, how long our daughter's living here, but let's say it could be forever, you know, you know, so, and if that's the case, it's just, you know, I don't want the other dog to be trapped upstairs, because that's how it seems to me. I don't need them laying on the couch together, but I don't want them fighting overall. That would be the goal. Just don't fight. You know, you don't have to be best friends. We just don't need a scrap. And if I, you know, having to put Trinity, like, you know, sit, stay, be in her place, it just feels like we're locking everybody in their prison cells for the moment just to have everyone together. And that's, yeah, it just doesn't seem fair to either dog at that point.
Yeah. But Trinity is reactive. I mean, the last time James was asleep on the couch, it was like early on a Saturday morning, I had Trinity on the leash. Normally she behaves on the leash, but this time she didn't. And she drug me off the couch like a rag dog, and I hit, like, I was injured, like, on the floor. You know, it wasn't a good situation. She just didn't listen.
Right.
So where, like, I want to get to a point where Trinity just, she doesn't even notice the dog. I guess that is in my ideal situation, is that it's just not even a big deal to Trinity. You know, like, she pays more attention to us, and she's more, you know, okay, James and Heather are in the room and the dog is not a big deal. I don't need, she's not a threat to me. I guess that would be my ideal situation, is that she doesn't see the dog as a threat. And then that's for people too, as people coming in. I just feel like everybody coming into the house or anybody coming down the stairs, Trinity sees as a threat, and she feels like she needs to protect her space, you know, or protect us. I think that might be the issue that we're dealing with.
Yeah, I would say it's people. I think coming down the stairs is now, she's associated with the other dog. And so they're automatically starting off on the wrong foot with her, you know, because anything that comes down those stairs is a potential fight for her, is what she might be looking for. I'm not sure. So we'll unpack this a little bit. So from what you've told me, I don't think it would be for Trinity, your Malinois, to just disengage and not care. I don't think is likely. Is it possible? Sure. But the only way I would be able to answer that is if I, you know, worked with you guys in person for a while, and we're not doing that. So it's more of just my experience is that once a dog, like I was saying earlier to James, like once a dog is like in fight mode with another dog, typically they're not ever going to just not care about one another. It's a natural instinct, especially for the other dog, to go into defense, which is why the other dog is going into defense, because they don't want to die and they don't want to get seriously injured. And so that's how the animal kingdom typically will work. That's how animals survive. They get shot at by a hunter. Next time they hear a hunter, smell a hunter, boom, they're gone. They're just, they take off, right? So it's kind of the same thing when dogs get into a situation where they get hurt and they get into fights and bad things happen to them, they're conditioned to be aversive to that as much as possible. They don't want to go near it. They're already like, I'm going to get you before you get me. The only way to make that realistic, let's say if I was there, right, or if you had a trainer in your area that were to go down this road, or how I would approach it if you were in my backyard, would be, you'd have to do lots of desensitization. So you would have to several, I mean, I would suggest 10 to 15 times a day, work on bringing the other dog through the house, up the stairs, down the stairs, through the house, up the stairs, down the stairs. But the problem is even if you get to a point where you think in your head, okay, Trinity doesn't care about the other dog anymore, you're still going to have to play zookeeper here and make sure, oh, well, she's going over to the other dog. No, leave it. You know, you're doing everything you can to make sure there's not another fight. So I would just say, and I'm just being honest with you, in my experience, even for you guys, and I don't want to say it's traumatic, but it certainly can be traumatic, and it certainly can be at the very least stressful. And there's a sense of anxiety when the other dog's around, because you're like, I don't know what's going to happen. Even if right now she stopped completely reacting towards the other dog, when the other dog's around, there's still going to be a heightened sense of anxiety. I don't think there's going to be a point where you just completely disregard, maybe like you had done in the past. I think because they've already gone after each other and Trinity's proven that she's not messing around. She's out to hurt the other dog. And if you're not around, she would like to probably do more damage than she has. And so I don't think there's ever going to be a point where even if we abracadabra'd and said, you don't care about the other dog, you guys are still going to be anxious about it. Like that. And that's just the reality I've seen is the dog owners struggle sometimes more than the dogs. So that's the first thing I would say. I would be, again, doing a lot of desensitization in and out, in and out, in and out, up and down, in and out, around, around, around. But here's the thing is if you have a dog during the desensitization process that is controlled on the leash and they actually don't like each other, or at least Trinity doesn't like the other dog and the other dog is just trying to survive, I find it to be just a matter of time before, you know, like you said, you're on the couch and then boom, you're dragged off the couch. We've never done that before. Personally, so anyway, desensitization, and then obedience, which would be Trinity place, down, stay. Okay, yeah, you can come on down. The dog goes outside. You know, that has to be at a level 3. I talked about that with James when we were on the live. You know, because listen, we do this, for an example, our board and train facility. We have up to 12 to 13 dogs in our training facility any given day, right? And they're all from different places doing different things. A lot of them don't like other dogs. We have 12, around the clock, 7 days a week for years and years and years and years, we've had 12 to 13 dogs in the same vicinity without any problems because they're managed, you know? So that's something to think about. Like, I know that it's not our home and I know that it's a business and I know that we're professionals, but it's something to think about. At no point in time is it stressful for us to go, yeah, but this dog doesn't like this dog. I'm like, well, they can't get to each other. So it doesn't matter. Like, it's not a big deal. So when you are doing the desensitization process, the obedience has to be level 3. You have to be, this dog is not going to move, but it's still not to be clear. It's not going to change how Trinity feels. Trinity's like, this is an intruder in my house and I don't want it here. And you have to be on your guard at all times. Personally, if you were to ask what my recommendation would be, because it sounds like your daughter has enough room upstairs or whatever to, you know, live a completely fine life with the dog and come outside and go for walks and do all the things that, I mean, that's on your daughter to, because I know that you said Trinity's got the, you know, a normal life outside of this, but it's like, okay, well, your daughter also could go out and walk the dog several times a day and go to the park and play and train. And here's the only conflict that I'm seeing is the transition of going downstairs and then back inside is the only real conflict. Mm-hmm. Outside of, again, and I think if you let go of, I have a Malinois that doesn't like the other dog that lives with us, how much here, and I always do this like equation in my hands of like, okay, how much stress is it going to cause to try to make this square fit in this round hole, which may never actually fit, right? Or you're realistic and you say, okay, yeah, daughter can come down, no problem. We're going to leave the other dog upstairs. Guess what? We've trained, you know, for half an hour. We went on multiple walks. It's totally fair. You're good. And the normalcy is well, they don't get along. So I'm not going to cause stress on you guys. I'm not going to cause stress on Trinity. I'm not going to get the other dog potentially attacked. I want to come down and watch a movie or eat dinner or hang out and whatever. It doesn't matter what you do. I just think the moment that you realize that that's totally normal to empower these things to happen, right? It's like, hey, I'm going to go over to my buddy's house. I'm going to bring my dog. It's like, why would you do that? There's all this stress involved. You're constantly watching. It's like, so the ideal world would be having good communication skills and a really good, in my opinion, like a really good crate command or a really good place downstay, but the crate would be the absolute superior. Like for an example, we have cleaners over at the house. I own one of the most protective breeds in the world. If somebody comes into my property, this dog is supposed to do everything but send them back home, you know? So he goes in his crate or he goes outside. Could I do obedience, place, downs? Sure. But at what risk of scaring the absolute daylights out of these guys as my dog is sitting there going, growling at them, right? And that's his job. I'm not mad about that. And again, like I was talking to James, I'd be kind of disappointed if I got a couch potato that's supposed to be a, you know, a protector. So,
sure.
So to me, it would just be realistic, like, as a professional. Yes, you could go down the road of desensitization to make them, because neutrality has to be a choice. So if we want dogs to be neutral, kind of like, hey, are you cool? Yeah, I'm cool. All right, we'll chill, right? And you kind of know, like, all right, like, that's a choice, you know? So neutrality is one of those things that the dog has to make the decision to want to do. When you watch my videos, you see a dog go from freaking out to then not freaking out. And a lot of times that's because they've made the decision to go, you know what? I don't feel like I need to do this anymore. I don't want to do this anymore. But to me, considering the dog's breed and considering what's already happened several times, she, you know, it sounds like she's just is out for blood. But then, if we go down the route of neutrality, you're still going to be walking on eggshells going, oh, where's the, and you're just constantly, you know, having more. So for me, it would be very binary. It would be, hey, when you come downstairs, I'm just going to pop Trinity in the crate. When you come back in, same thing. That's how it would be for me. And I'm not trying to give you the easiest route. I'm trying to give you the most stress-free, immediate change, because this isn't, hey, my dog's not coming back when called. My dog's pulling on the leash. My dog doesn't like other dogs. This is a situation where we have my daughter living in another part of the house and with her dog that my dog just hates. So to completely diminish the stress, it would be a text or a phone call or a call down this, hey, I'm bringing, oh, okay, Trinity crate, a little piece of treat on top, because there's treats on top of the crate. We give a treat in there. We shut the, yep, you're good. Until the dog comes back in, boom. And that way you can sleep on the couch. You can do work. You can watch TV. You can do emails. You have no worry. And I'm just telling you, like, I'm empowering you that that is totally not only normal, but it's responsible, because like you were saying, James, is like, I feel bad, you know, about the dog. And it's like the quality of life with the amount of stress that you put on yourself to try to put a square in a round hole is so stressful. When I'm like, look, she's probably never going to like this other dog. That's the reality. And you trying to make it work is going to be more stressful than you just cutting your ties and being realistic and saying, hey, you're going to go in here and you're going to go in. I mean, again, like we do behavior modification, board and train training 7 days a week, all year long. And we have all these dogs that historically would never get along, but they're all in their little places. You're in here and you're in here, you know, all these little cubicles, these little kennels that we have. And every day a trainer goes in and brings them out. They walk by all the other dogs and there's no issues, knock on wood, because we don't have the expectation of them. And I know it's completely different context, because obviously this is your daughter and your home.
I'm hearing you.
So,
but I mean, Trinity doesn't have any problems, you know, going on walks. She walks by dogs.
Oh, dude, so I did it. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. We were walking the other day, and we hit this trail, and there's a line of houses against the trail, and I'm coming towards the corner where it splits, and I can see this dog's face just sticking out of the fence. And then yeah. Up above that is another, like, it's bigger brother dog. I have no idea.
Yeah.
And like, he's halfway out of the fence on the trail. And so I started to tense up, but I caught that because I'm like, oh crap, this dog is right in line. She could have gave a shit less about the other dog. She stuck right by me. And then as soon as we got close, the other dog charged in its yard and just ran along the fence line barking. Didn't come out, and Trini's like, she looked, you know, she wanted to kind of flirt with it a little bit,
yeah.
But then we just kept going. So
the problem really is specific to one dog that has it, yes. That's in her house. But I think your point to trying to fit a square peg into a round hole is really relevant, because I think he tried to do that even when people coming over here.
Yep.
You know, crate is a great situation for that, because it really is the stigma of our family saying, why did you get a dog like that? Why can't we pet your dog? Why can't, you know, your dog is this kind of breed, but they're not I mean, our dog is very loving and very obedient and very, I mean, she's wonderful with us. What? And so it's, why isn't your dog this way with everybody else? And I feel like we are constantly having to make excuses and explain our breed to our own family.
It's like
our dog's not for you.
It's
like,
right.
We didn't buy our
dog. I don't
we
know.
Didn't get our dog for you.
If you ever watch like Kevin Hart's comedy, like he had that bit where it's like, does that dog bite? Well, not me. And that's, yeah. That is so real. Like she does. I've tried. Like I put her in a situation. I know that sounds wrong, but like
yeah.
She won't bite me for nothing. Like as soon as her teeth even like touch skin, she's off immediately. Like she knows. But like, you know, like her dad came over, and my mother-in-law, like dog trainer, I put air quotes cause she's trained her own dogs, but like, she like every time I'm on the phone with her, well, you know, the type of dog you got, people should be able to come around you in your house. And I said, that's not true. Like you know, it's a different type of dog, you know? And
yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. Instead, go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI and a watch and tab on any plan. Only on Verizon.
With new line on my plan. Service plan required for watch and tab. Additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
So we get a lot of flack on the fact that I bought a Malinois, even though I did a year's research before I got this dog. I knew it was going to be a lot of work.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like, I don't care if my dog likes you, honestly, but I don't want to bite you.
Yeah.
You know, when my father-in-law was here, she came under the table and she doesn't know him. And she was sniffing and he reached out. And as soon as he reached out, she didn't bite him, but she nipped and she came in and he's like, you're going to get sued over this dog. And I'm like, are you going to sue me? Like what? Like this is happening in our home. But yeah, anyway, sorry. That's the tangent.
Yeah, no, it's all relevant. Mm-hmm. And I think, like I said before, you're going to start to really realize that there's a common thread here. Like, oh, well maybe. Yeah. Like you guys are on the exactly right path. Like this, I've met a lot of different Malinois. I have one that lives at the facility. I have a Dutch Shepherd, which is basically a Malinois, a black Malinois. And yeah. All the different genetics are all different, right? And so I don't want to say like, yeah, all Malinois are the same, because I've met some very docile, goofy, playful, like doodle-esque Malinois, but some of them aren't. You know, they're bred to work. They're bred to be protective, excuse me, and a lot of them are usually a couple handler dogs. That's their, and like you said, to your point, anytime somebody comes in the house, it's this suspicion, and to the dog, they're like constantly, and of course, it's your dad, it's your mom, it's your daughter's dog, and you're good, like, with that, but she, because she doesn't know them, is not like that, and so I totally have a lot of empathy for you, because again, even with Burley, which you know, same situation, like a friend that I haven't seen in a long time will come over. And of course it's like a family friend of long time, you know, you'd trust them with your life. And my dog's like, who the F are you? And you got to remember like, oh shit. Yeah. Like these dogs are actually bred to warn off the strange things that they don't know. Right. And so it's the same. So here's what I would say is like, it would be the same thing. And I have a lot of friends who have police dogs. I have a lot of friends that have like PSA working protection dogs, right? And a lot of times, like it's the same principle of if there's going to be somebody else in the home, crate or outside, and there's nothing wrong with that. It's safer for your dog. It's safer for the people. And you guys immediately like there's not many things with dog training that can instantaneously take stress out of your life than just putting your dog in a crate and letting them sleep instead of prowl your house and check everyone's IDs to see if they're okay. And you watching this and then your dad or your father-in-law telling you that, you know, you're going to get sued for a dog like this. So, and I, you know, I hate to be as I'm not trying to avoid the situations. I'm just saying with this particular dog, the alternative would be this. The alternative would be like, wow, you have a doodle this isn't normal. You know, these doodles are not supposed to be this protective. They're not supposed to be nipping. They're not supposed to be aggressive. You should really start working on the behavior modification process. But Malinois, typically, once they sexually mature, especially if they're intact like yours is, they go through the second heat. Then they start to become protective. They start to become more aggressive. They start to become more serious, and they take these jobs more serious. And for me, again, it's very similar to Burley. Again, cleaners came over. Even my friends and family who come over, who he knows, because he's 150 pounds of all muscle, but running around the house, I'm like, I know in my head, okay, people are coming over tonight for Valentine's Day, whatever. He's going to go for 3 or 4 walks today. He's going to get played. He's going to get trained. And then when they come over, he's going to be in a down stand as better. He's going to be in his crate chewing on a bone. But my point is putting your dog away for their safety and yours. Sometimes I feel like dog owners feel like they're regressing, or they feel like they're avoiding, or they feel like it's not real training. And the reality is it's the safest, most effective training in those situations with a dog like you have.
Okay.
Yeah. No, I think that's great. I think it's that gives a lot of relief, I guess.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it's like, wow, that's, and again, I feel bad because I wish I could, because if again, to reiterate, if this was something I thought wasn't normal, or if this was something that didn't make sense or not supposed to be happening, I would be going down a different road of behavior modification with this, but I'm not seeing any of that here.
No, I appreciate. So like going to the vet in this, which the vet should be fun, haha, but it's not. No, so the first visit we had at the vet, you know, she was growling at people. I mean, she's what, 5 months old? She was definitely making it clear, don't freaking touch me. I don't know you.
Yeah.
And that vet, which I refuse to see anymore, was like, that's a bad dog. You shouldn't bite that dog. That dog's going to end up euthanized. I mean, this was a vet. Like, and I'm like, yeah. You just met this dog. Now, my real vet, which is a lot more patient, but our last visit was a little bit of a train wreck where they had to draw vet blood. They had to do, you know, her shots. And they brought her in, and I told them to do this. It was supposed to be on the file. Keep her with me in the same room. And then it'll be much easier. And, you know, they want her on trazodone, gabapentin, you know, drugged up before she goes in there, which I can comply with that. I hate it, but I'll do it. But I had a muzzle on her, and she's like, well, she's just super anxious and aggressive. We need to work on some behavior stuff. And I'm like, she doesn't know you. Like, we see you once a year, if that, you know, it's like, so... I don't know. I've been trying to find a vet that knows Mal's specifically, but California, it's all about, you know, they're Walmart type veterinarians, you know, so.
Yeah. So I similarly hopefully make you feel better. I had an incident recently with my own vet, with my own dog, very similar. He had Burley. He had diarrhea, and it was just not normal. It was like Giardia or something. I'm not sure. He's fine, but I brought him to the vet. Saw a vet that didn't know me, didn't know him. Sorry. And same thing. He's never been. And again, like the vet, like when I brought him when he was a puppy. That's why I encourage people like bring your dog as much as you can. And my vets would like, I basically like going to grandma's house. I'm like, I don't care. Make this enjoyable. I don't care if it's string cheese. I don't care if it's cheese whiz. I don't care what you give him. You know, I'm like, just make this enjoyable because he's going to be a dog that's going to be a very challenging dog if he doesn't like you or like coming here. So every time we go, it is that. It's perfect. He loves it. He's excited. The vets come in. And he's jumping up and down, and he's like, gimme, 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 because they love up on him, which is great. This vet I have never met before, I needed to get him in. I didn't care who it was. And she was terrified of him. and he's never been, he's never had his temperature taken. So it's obviously like a rectal thermometer, boom, right up his butt. And he's like, whoa. And of course he backed up and he was like, what the hell, looking back. And she was terrified of him. She's like, can you hang on to him? I'm like, no, he's a buffalo. Like, I can't. So I just was like looking at her and I'm like, she's like, man, he's just, I don't think I'm going to be able to do this. I'm like, what did you expect? Like, you just stuck something straight up his butt. He doesn't know who you are. You got two people trying to hang on to him who also don't know what they're doing. And you're afraid of him. And so it's the same thing, man. Like, I deal with it with my own personal dogs. I'm like, you said it, man. I mean, they're just like with trainers, right? How many times you're in the members club, you probably listen to my podcast or watch my YouTube videos. How many times have you heard like the craziest stories of other trainers doing the craziest things? Like this last people who came in, they were told to growl at their dog, throw beanbags at the dog, spray the dog in the face with water, all this stuff. So there's good vets and there's bad vets, but you do the best you can. And to your point, absolutely. I had a Malinois Hawk who lives at my facility. If he does not know you, he will 100% try to hurt you. And we are very safe with him. And we had to bring him to the vet for his shots. And I had this vet, it was during COVID. She walked outside with me. He was muzzle punching her, growling at her, shaking, saliva everywhere. He was nasty. And she just was cool and calm. And she's like, it's fine. I'm used to it. She's like, let's just keep doing this. And I was like, I was like, you are a saint. I was just so impressed with this woman's patience and understanding and empathy for the situation. She's like, he doesn't like me. I have to do my job. I'll spend as much time as we need to do that. And I was like, so there are vets out there that will absolutely do the thing that the dog needs. And if you bring a dog to a vet, like it just, and they're aggressive, and they're afraid of them, it makes their job harder. Imagine just rolling through all these little kittens and cats that are just cute and fluffy and, you know, and then they get a Malinois with a muzzle growling. They get a 150-pound rhino that doesn't want a thermometer up their butt. Like, you know, bucking like a legit bucking bronco. It's like, of course they're going to be frustrated. They shouldn't be, but they're just so used. I mean, it's clockwork for them. They come in for 10 minutes, they're out. They're in, they're out. I love vets. I have family members that are vets. But some of them are awful, just like some restaurants are awful in a chain. So I totally understand that. It is very, very, very frustrating. It's not your fault. But again, like, yeah, you have a dog that doesn't like new people. You know, every time they're in the vet, they get poked, prodded, and stuck with something. So they're automatically like, this place sucks. Why wouldn't it suck? Every single time they've been there, something bad has happened to them.
Right.
So of course, yeah, it sucks. And then they get somebody who's afraid of them and telling you, you know, and they read that energy. They come into the room and they go, this dog is awful and I don't want it around me. Like they know the dog's like, well, you know,
her vet was, cause I told her, I said, you know, we're working on this. We're doing e-collar training. And she instantly, I could see her tense up and she goes, look, I won't normally recommend e-collars, but if it's working, by all means. And I'm like, it's working so far. It's a work in progress. Let me put it that way.
Yeah.
Because
they all are.
I'm still trying to figure out. I think I put a question on there of like, I can't, she's not giving tells when she feels it, or either she feels it and she is driving right through it and it doesn't matter.
Do you have my unit?
I have the 2.0.
The two dogs. Yep, the two dog unit. Yeah. Sorry. Okay, so how did you introduce it?
First, we just put it on her at first, and then I started to kind of toy around with, you know, let her walk around and see if I could get it to twitch. I thought on the original, it was around a 4. I think I noticed.
Okay.
Because we have the first one, the original, and then we upgraded. And then now I've got it on a 6 and I don't see anything. But the vibrate, she hates that. Like, and it's the corrective. It's, you know, because she charges at a fence when another dog comes out barking.
Yeah.
And that's usually like, I'll hit that. But she just did it while we were on the call.
That's and why I had to.
She was not backing off at all. It was not, you know, she just kept going at it. But anyways, yeah.
Yeah. So how long was the process of when you started the low level stimulation to the vibrate?
Probably not long enough, I would say. I think.
Well, we used the first one for like the first unit first. So I guess she's had both units. So, but this one wasn't long enough. I think because we used the first unit first, we didn't spend enough time on the new unit.
But we did use the vibrate for correction pretty quickly.
Okay. And there's nothing, you know, in my e-collar course, I talk about intervention, which is where I would use the remote collar vibration at any point in time during the training process if it's a dangerous situation, like your other dog's going to get attacked or something like that, or a person. However, it is really important to... So anyway, let me back up a little bit. The remote collar stimulation in the beginning, when you're introducing it, you don't see much. Some people will say, well, I want to know what the... So we have working levels and conditioning... corrective levels and conditioning levels, right? So the corrective levels are any level on the remote collar that the dog finds aversive. They don't like it. They want it to go away, okay? It's discomforting for them. The conditioning levels are the opposite of that. They feel it. It's not discomforting. It's not aversive. They feel it, but... They could care less if it's on or off. They just know that it's on. Your job is to say, that's me, right? And then it has a meaning. So when you're doing the finding of the levels, I just usually go on a 3 to 5 because that's what the bazillion dogs that I've trained on the remote collar are. So I usually just go there. But if somebody like in a seminar or a client in general just says, I want to know what the levels are, all I'll do is I'll turn it on and I'll just go up really slow, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And the moment the dog, they'll either look down and think that they stepped on something, or they will scratch at their neck, or, you know, little tiny subtleties like their ear will flick. They might blink, just tiny subtle, like, you know, think about it. If you touch the dog, they're going to turn around, right? But we're talking very tiny, I mean, comparison, right? So when we see a difference in the dog, we're not talking about the dog. And again, discomfort, where the dog is starting to physically notice something and they're trying to figure out what it is. Once you get to that level, it's typically right below that. Again, 95% of the dogs I've ever conditioned on the remote collar is between 3 and 5. And we're doing it in a non-distracted environment. And I usually do that for about a week on pre-known behaviors. And then once the dog understands that that's you, and the way that I typically will proof that is with the recall in place, continuous. So place, holding the stim, the dog goes to the place. I verbally will say it, and then I'll do a nonverbal, right? So I'll recall the dog 3 times with the e-collar and the verbal. The 4th time, just the e-collar, the dog turns around, boom. I know that the dog feels the remote collar and the dog knows how to respond and turn it off. Those are the most important things when introducing the remote collar. They understand the equation, fair enough. Then you can start using, then you're in that like promised land of, okay, now my dog is e-collar conditioned. Then you do the long line and then you start, you know, introducing the remote collar in a lot of different ways. And then you can go up in the stimulations as a correction. The pager is supposed to be this very, very aversive, holy crap, I don't like this. And these are really great for a lot of things, jumping, stealing food, you know, going after another dog, reacting towards another dog. It's a disruptor. It's an interrupter. Boom, stop, stop. So that's the general idea of that as like a crash course just in the future. So a lot of people have to kind of go back down to the basics and revamp that and reintroduce it.
Well, I've been using, I cracking myself up when I take her for walks because I'm like, this dog's got so much equipment on. I mean, you know, it's the e-collar. I've got her pinch collar, which that is a godsend on walks with her. But like, I don't yank on it or anything like that. But one thing I think I need to work on and maybe asking for advice within this statement is she's very I probably in my training somewhere I made a glitch, but it's very anticipatory. So like if I pull her into a heel, she will go to a heel, but about 2 seconds later, she's out of it. She's like, no. Or if I say wait, and then as soon as I take a step, she's let's go. You know, there's no waiting for that next, it's okay for me to move, it's okay for me to break out of this heel or a sit or a down. Like sitting down for her, she looks at us like you're trying to murder me. It is so slow motion to set her butt down on the
ground. While she's like and locked eyes with you.
It's hilarious. It's.
Yeah. Yeah. So a lot of times with the sit, it typically is a, can I get away with this? Do I have to type of thing? Typically.
That's what I'm
saying. Yeah. So a lot, that's what that typically is when a dog is really slow to sit, it's because they're looking at the opportunity to get out of it where they're like, do I have to do this? So that's typically that. So a lot of times what I do is I just go back and recondition it. So, I'll just get the collar out, get the leash out, you know, get your rewards out, and I'll just recondition it. So I say sit and the dog starts to half-ass it. And then I'll put pressure on until the dog sits faster. And that's how you recondition it. Because if you allow the dog to get away with, I mean, dogs are opportunistic, especially if you have, you know, a velociraptor of a dog, right? Like Clever Girl, then it becomes very dangerous because the dog is super opportunistic. So if they get away with one thing one time, then, you know, they're like, I got this, right? So in the beginning, if at one point you said sit and they just were like interested in something else, barely put their butt on the ground and you accepted that, then they're like, well, this is what sit is. I'm not going to do it any other way. I'm going to half-ass it. I'm not going to do it fast. I'm not going to do it with enthusiasm. I'm just going to do it, you know, and to basically try to get away. And a lot of times what they'll do too is they'll just start to put their butt down and then they'll just like pause and then they try to break. And then if you at any point had said, yep, that's fine, then they're like, well, yeah, this fine. Just keeps getting better and better, you know?
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No. I was just going to say, if you wanted to recondition it, you just go back and recondition.
Keep at it. Yeah. The other thing, which I think it all correlates together. So like my youngest, I mean, she's 12, she'll come down, same with my wife, but it's starting to change with Heather. Not with me, but if they come down and approach her and go to pet her, she growls, but it's an interesting growl. But she'll lower her head almost like cower and wants to be pet. She'll even lay down right on the floor and roll over. But if you pet her, she's growling at you.
Mm.
And so my flags go up watching, like, don't put your face in that dog's face, dude. Like, you know, cause I don't want an incident, you know, especially with the inner family, you know, if it's some guy I don't know, go ahead. Like, but I mean, that is a joke, but
she'll actually come over to me. Like I'll allow her up on the couch. Like she'll come to me, approach me, ask to come up and lay with me, snuggle up with me, and then be growling as she's like cuddling me. I'm like, well, you came to me, why are you growling at me, you know? And sometimes I know it's vocalization.
Yeah.
Like she's just a vocal dog, but sometimes it's a growl. I'm like, don't growl at me when you came to me.
Yeah, like, and you said,
I used the pager to correct the growl at times when I felt it was inappropriate, but I've also been told you don't correct the growl, and then so it's, I, you know, it's kind of a mix up on that.
Yeah, like you said, it can definitely be the vocalization. Like some dogs are just vocal. That could be a thing. I've met a couple dogs in my life that are definitely vocal. Like they just like really girthy growling, and it, you know, it's scary, but that's how. And then they, you know, I've had dogs, like I had this Australian Shepherd one time. Same thing, super, and then you like, okay, and you walk away and they shove their body back into you and like put their paw up on you. They're like, come on, I want more.
Yeah.
So it could, I've seen it before, definitely. So it could be that. I would just say if it's not that and you feel like it's confusion or you feel like it's just a dog trying to have, it's like a Malinois trying to, yeah, sure, I want to be pet. And then all of a sudden they realize that they're a Malinois and they're like, don't touch me. What are you doing? And then the people are like, what? Again, to me, those privileges are gone. Like you've lost those privileges. Like if I put my dog outside and they chewed on my sauna or something, I would be like, you can't, those privileges are gone for both of us now, you know? So my point is if a dog is exhibiting behaviors that you feel like are very inappropriate, yes, you could go through the lines of, especially if it's predicated off of somebody else, more importantly. So if your family and friends are like, can I pet your dog? And you say, yes, she rolls over on her back and gives the belly and then starts growling and then they start freaking out. I mean, you could say, well, that's kind of how she is when she's getting pet. Or you could say, ah, this is kind of sketchy, I don't love this. And then the next time people say, can I pet your dog? You say no. Or again, I think that this would be more of the kind of the roadmap for you guys is, you know, when people are over, she's just in her crate and or on her place. And you just tell people like, she's weird with new people and I don't want to stress about it. And that's it.
Is it wrong? I mean, wrong. Is it okay? Like if my youngest comes down and then she, because as soon as she starts walking downstairs, now we're associating the stairs again, there is a growl that hits. Is it wrong to hit that disruptor, the vibrate? Like, no, it's not okay to do that right now. Like there's no point for you to be growling. Is that okay?
You can. I think that that's appropriate to let her know that that's inappropriate. Like we're not going to do that. But yeah, the answer is yes. I think that if your dog is growling unwarranted for no reason at all, like if your friends and family are over and she just comes up and starts growling at him, or if they, because somebody, so there's context to that, so it's a little bit deeper than that. The answer is yes. I think at any point in time, if you find something that's inappropriate with your dog that they're doing, it's appropriate for you to, that's your job as a dog owner, like is to, but somebody, let's say you're hanging out right now and somebody a friend walks into your house and they're just being dumb and they don't ask, or they don't realize that you have a dog, whatever. Or you're coming inside and a family member's right behind you and she didn't know that they were there. And now she's growling and barking because she, so I just like to give people the benefit of the doubt to understand that to her, she doesn't understand that that's your family member or your friend. Right? Or if your daughter has a friend over or something, she just thinks somebody came in behind you and now I have to attack them, or now I have to scare them out of our home, whatever. So I always just give, like, you know, that's my whole like ethos behind the No Bad Dogs brand, is just understanding if your dog's doing something, especially if you don't like it, or if you deem it inappropriate, there's probably a reason. So, and I'm not saying that the reason is appropriate. I'm just saying your job is to identify the reason and then decide if that's appropriate. So for me, again, cleaners come over, two random people my dogs don't really know. They come over to my house. My dog's like, you're an intruder. I'm like, you're not wrong, you know? But again, like what I don't try to tell my South African Borbal Mastiff that he shouldn't be protective over my home with my two boys that are 2 years old in the rooms next door. I'm not expecting him to just go, oh, okay, run out. You, come on in. I'm not, you know, my job is to say, I get why you're barking. I see why you're barking. Cause a lot of times if my dogs are barking, I also investigate like, why are you barking? And to this point, Burley will bark cause the leaf falls. So now it's like the boy who cried wolf, but I will address it and I'll either do in my head. I go, okay, what's logical here? Open the door, go outside. It's sunny. It's cold, but it's sunny. You go hang out, and when the cleaners leave, you can come back in. Or I'll say, you're going to go in your crate, and you're going to take a nap for an hour or two. Or if I'm down here working, I'll bring the dog down and put him on a place. Excuse me. But I just think for you guys and her, you have to look at the scenario and go, what is fair for everyone here? Somebody coming into the house and she growls and barks. I get it. I would find that semi-appropriate. But at what point do we say, hey, quit the crap, go lay down? I mean, that's your responsibility as a dog owner. Is if here's a good way to put it. If you have a dog that is going to do these things, if you have a Malinois and they start to do Malinois stuff, your responsibility is kind of like if you own a loaded gun there, which is what she is, that you know what you're doing with it and you're safe with it. And that's all. That's again, same exact thing as having, you know, a big protective dog. It's the ability to be like, you know, if I see somebody walking outside with a gigantic dog that they can't control, I don't care if they're nice, mean, or protective, I'm going the other way. Cause I'm like, you don't have control over that dog and this is dangerous.
That's so, fair. Okay.
Anyway.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, I appreciate. I mean, now when I, in the beginning, when I asked you, as far as like spaying, I mean,
yep.
It's all over the map, but I mean, as close to two is what seems to be the Mal consensus, at least what people are throwing at me.
And I don't want to go through another heat.
Yeah.
So yep. I'm like, hey, please tell us right now is fine. No, I'm just kidding. What is your recommendation?
Yep. Good question. Now? Yep. Good question. So I've done a couple podcasts with some doctors, some veterinarians on this who specialize in breeding and know a lot about maturity with dogs and how they mature and what stages and what ages and all the fun things, more than I know. And from our experience, if you keep, especially like a male, for an example, for both sexes, if you keep a dog intact and you allow them to mature, they fully develop, right? Their growth plates grow, their bones fully develop. Those are the big benefits. For my bigger dogs, I had a St. Bernard. I kept him intact his whole life. And Burley, I'll probably leave intact at least until two, if not the rest of his life. That's why I always have, if I have another dog, it'll be another, it's always another female, because I don't want any, you know, male issues, right? So there's benefits to both. For me, like once my St. Bernard, when he was around six, he just became really grouchy and didn't like other dogs that he didn't know. And so for me, I'm like, he's six. I'm not going to fix him. And, because there's no studies and there's nothing that shows that. The only thing that we know is it takes away their testosterone. So, you know, but that doesn't necessarily guarantee that the dog is going to change and become calmer, less aggressive, less reactive, less protective. There's nothing that says that. I mean, if you have so for me, it's really a decision to say, I'd rather my dog grow to their full potential and let all their bones and body grow and develop. And then if you make I fixed Lakota, my female Dutchie, who had her second heat. After her second heat, I fixed her for those reasons too. I didn't want to deal with the heat. I wasn't breeding her. I'm not a breeder. I don't care about that. And so for females, I totally would understand why, because there's a lot more to females going through their heat and dealing with that. With males, there's really nothing, right, except for more testosterone. And even like, you know, it depends on how he matures and develops. I might fix him at some point, but it's really a coin toss in what you find. And to be fair, even if in your head you're like, well, the only reason why I wouldn't fix her is, you know, I think that after their second heat, they're fully matured physically. They got all the things that they need, and fixing the dog after that point would be the right move if you were going to do it. I think having from a pet perspective, having an intact female after the second heat and not breeding doesn't make sense. Makes sense for most people.
Sure. Yeah. Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay. That makes sense. And a final thing. I've been like, cause you know, I keep her active. I train this dog to run on a treadmill. Her and I run on it together, it can be the bigger she got though.
Yeah.
I mean, cause she pushes me off. But you know, I was looking into like agility classes and stuff like that, but like they're all group classes. And so that's where I'm going. Shit. we might have an issue with dogs.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think everything we're doing here, I'm hoping it would incorporate on the outside, and that, you know, I'm trying to look for something to help expound that energy. Aside from running and walking and playing, I mean, she is a battery that recharges in 30 seconds. I mean, which, you know, is just finding it in those outlets.
Yeah, I would say, you know, as far as the agility, there are definitely some companies that do like private agility stuff. I also think it depends, man. Like, so many different agility places run it differently. It's all up. Some people will say one dog at a time. Yes, there's going to be other dogs in the room, but who cares? Like, is, you know, your dog's going to be the only dog in the ring. Big whoop. Some don't. Some of the other dogs are just sitting there. Not many, but some places do that. So I wouldn't say that's necessarily like out of the picture. I think if you're like, hey, my dog doesn't like other dogs, they'd probably be like, well, a lot of these dogs don't. So that's, I don't think that you should just throw that away just yet. I think you should explore it a little bit. But I just think training, like advancing your training, and even for Lakota, now that she's healed past her TPLO, like I just do a lot of like, even my staff, like when they get their dog out, they just do threshold stuff. They throw a ball, they recall the dog before they get there. They throw a ball, they down the dog, and then they recall the dog back, and then they send the dog back away. So really just when, it's just like with getting into shape. You get into the best shape of your life, you feel great, you look good, everything's perfect. You're really just conditioning. You're like, I'm just going to stay here, right? I'm going to condition. So you're still going to work out several times a week. You're still going to eat clean. It's not like you get into the best shape of your life and you train your dog to the best ability and then just stop doing it, because then things get rusty and things start to fall off and eventually you come out of that shape. So I think my answer would be, what your dog would be happiest doing is working with you and testing the dog thresholds again. I mean, I never really put it like that. Like my trainers who train professionally, what they do with their dog on their break is exactly what I said, is they test them. They throw the ball, the dog's sprinting down, boom, come right in front of the ball. The dog has to come back. They send their dog back. So my answer would be advancing your dog all the way to the level 3 obedience, which would be off leash, listening under any circumstance. And then after that, it would be conditioning, you know, and just testing and testing and testing and outletting.
Yeah. Can I piggyback up? Because you said food. And so we've been transitioning all kinds of different foods. I mean, right now she's eating, it's called Stella and Chewy.
Yep.
So it's like this kibble raw.
I'm familiar. Yeah.
But at first, she devoured it. Now she is shifting into this grazer, which she'll eat all the raw bits and leave all the kibble is what she's doing. And so like, I'm trying to be consistent. I've backed off on this, where if you don't eat it, I just pull it and then you can wait till dinner.
Yep.
Cause she's becoming a very picky eater unless stuff is mixed into it now. You know, I mean, I've went with the full raw debate, which I don't disagree with it. It's a lot of work.
Yep.
That's it, for sure. But I mean, is it best to set a schedule? And if you don't eat within this amount of time, I just pull your bowl up and you're tapped out, or.
Yeah. That's what I would do. Like if I put food down for my dogs and they didn't eat it, I would pick it up. Well, I mean, if it's a normal thing for her to do, then yeah, I would pick it up and then just say, hey, you don't get this until you eat it. Like it's gone, especially if you're grazing. Yeah.
Okay. I mean, yeah.
She's not food motivated.
She's not. She is toy driven. It is rope and ball.
And that's what
she's very.
Yeah, that's what I would be taking advantage of. I would be taking full advantage of if I have a dog that, you know, like Lakota does, she loves the ball, she loves the frisbee, she loves chasing, she loves tugging. I'd be taking full advantage of that.
Okay. Yeah. Perfect. Okay.
All right, guys. It's lovely meeting you. Good luck with everything.
Nice to meet you.
I'm sure I'll see you in the club. So
yes, you will.
Cool. Good luck, guys. Have a great weekend.
You too. Thanks, man.
Thank you. Yep. Bye.
Bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. Instead, go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI and a watch and tab on any plan. Only on Verizon.
With new line on my plan. Service plan required for watch and tab. Additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.